Welcome to the Family Alpha Podcast, a place where information is exchanged with the expectation that it is to be applied. I am your host, Hunter Drew, founder of thefamilyalpha.com, as well as co-founder of thefraternityofexcellence.com. Now let's dive into a discussion that can help you help yourself. Again, this is the Family Alpha Podcast. Now let's get to work. Welcome to another episode on the Family Alpha Podcast. Today, I am joined once again by Alex from Sustained Gluttony. Alex, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Hunter. Thanks again for having me on. Really excited to be here.
So the last time you were on, we were talking about 10 easy, we were just about to launch 10 easy wins for easier fat loss. You had written the book. We were talking about your methodology behind that, you know, a little bit of your history. And now you're back on the show because we're launching something else. We've got the recipe book, you know, the ingredient list and equipment list needed to sustain this body. So let me ask you, how has it been since, you know, you launched the book and became that guy who eats 4,000 calories and still has an 8-pack?
It's been great, Hunter. I honestly put the book out last year because I thought it was a lot of good content that people could use if they wanted to and could improve their own lives just from hearing my own story. I didn't expect it to do as well as it's done. I was, you know, reasonably expecting to have 5 to 10% of the sales that I've had from it. Even after I had a solid first week, I kind of figured that, it would sort of cap out at best, you know, slightly over where I am now in terms of overall sales. The amount of support and positive feedback from it has just been phenomenal, where I'm not talking about people saying like, hey, you know, it's pretty good. It's like, I get direct messages from people. People are quote tweeting me, or they're tweeting me. They're reaching out to me on Instagram. And the feedback that I'm getting directly is like 95%, like, this is amazing. And, 5% of the people who reach out to me are like maybe unsatisfied about something or the other. But, typically in the various jobs that I've had outside of, running my own online business, most of the time people reach out, it's because they're dissatisfied, right? That's usually what, when I reach out to like customer support or something like that, it's usually because it's like, hey, you guys stole my money. Give it to me back. Very rarely do I send a note to a supplier saying, hey, that was awesome. So I think in my general work life, the balance between like really happy people and people who are disappointed is maybe 80-20 or something like that, 90-10, favoring people who are unhappy. And then when we actually switch it to this book, it's like the exact opposite. Like almost every message that I get is like, Ed Lattimore saying, this is potentially groundbreaking. I have former Major League Baseball players who I never even met while I was playing, who I don't even know through my friends, randomly reaching out to me on social media saying, that what I have could be like incredibly transformative, groundbreaking, other people on Twitter who are actual trainers who've read a lot of the same books that you might've read or that I've read. They're familiar with the same studies that we are familiar with, just really appreciated the way that, they're saying that I condensed what is possibly esoteric scientific information or perhaps boring information into very actionable, like, okay, so this is what I do to apply it. These are the simple things that I do. These are the things that are complex that I don't worry about. And so it's just been, it's been phenomenal. And I think leading up to that launch, I wanted to get that book out as fast as I could, just because my audience was starting to grow. I wanted to get people something that described the framework around what I was doing, because I got a lot of messages like, hey, is there like a website, or how do I understand like holistically what you're doing? Because you're posting all these pictures of great food and some training, but I don't understand how it all works. And so, if I have infinite amount of hours, maybe I release everything at once, but because I don't, it's going to come in waves. And so wave one was the framework, the methodology behind the diet. Wave two, sensibly, is how do I actually make this food? And so when everybody bought the book, they were really excited about, understanding the framework that I use, but that still didn't teach them how to cook food. And so for my email subscribers, a few weeks ago, I shared a pizza recipe that I've tweeted out several times. Sometimes it has cheese, sometimes it doesn't. I get flack from people who say if there's no cheese on it, it's not pizza. But you know, I want to share very simple things that people can make. And so the step one is sharing that pizza recipe. It's like 400 calories. It's delicious. I probably eat it 8 to 10 times a month. And that's also included in this recipe book. But there's many other things. You know, it's like my goal for this whole thing is just trying to communicate to people that having a fit lifestyle does require work, but it doesn't require the work that is presented to you in popular media. No, you're not going to get there from just simply taking a pill. And no, you don't need to like absolutely kill yourself with CrossFit workouts 5 times a week, right? The truth is somewhere in the middle, but it can only be in the middle if you actually know what you're doing. Fortunately, I figured out over many years of experimentation what I'm doing. And I want to show people how easy it is. You know, I was mentioning to you before, I was planning on eating my lunch prior to us recording, but then I kind of figured like, maybe I should just eat it on the air to show people like, this is like legit what I eat. Whoop, that steak just fell on my computer.
5 seconds.
Go get a little tissue to wipe that one off. But, you know, I just want to show people that what they think is required is not. Maybe there's a little bit more that's required that they hadn't realized, but you know, this whole fitness and diet thing, if you understand what you're eating and you understand how you're training and you understand how to push yourself through adversity, it's a lot easier than people make it out to be.
I would have to say that is the single greatest strength of our last discussion, you know, and I told you live, I'm somebody who suffered from just normal eating, very active lifestyle. I didn't think about things too much. I knew not to eat when I wasn't hungry, and I ate when I was, and it wasn't very much processed stuff. It was a lot of, you know, lean meats, you know, the pizza every now and then, just normal things. Mm-hmm. And then I left, and then all of a sudden I started finding these, like, oh, if you fast the way our ancestors did, you know, that's the way to get lean. I was like, all right, cool. I want to be lean. I want to be strong and lean. So I'm going to fast. And then keto, and then carnivore. And I was the guy you're talking about. I was the guy bouncing from thing to thing to thing. And it's, I lost muscle mass. I gained fat. I looked worse than I did before when I was just eating whatever and doing whatever. And I was just like, what is going on? I'm doing all these diets and things. And then I started the program. I believe it was maybe a month before our call. Mm-hmm. And I had told, you know, I just started eating again, and I still have to talk to myself about like, look, it's normal to eat. I don't have to wait till dinner within my 4-hour window. Like just eat normal, you know, periodically throughout the day. And after our discussion, I put that out. I was pushing the book. I was like, guys, check this out. Dude, my inbox, and I'm not even kidding. 2 days ago, I got a DM. I meant to share this and link it to the book. It was a man who's 50 years old.
Yeah.
Said after he watched our show that he stepped back from his entire life and all the fad diets he'd been on and just started getting after it. And he said he's already starting to like just get comfortable with food again. And he's not worrying about, you know, this weird window of eating or only being able to have 14 carbs, you know, like normal again. And he's like, he feels so good. And he's like, it's only been like 3 or 4 days.
That's
like,
awesome.
Wow, man, like that is great. That's exactly why we're doing this.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it's like, you know, as I get older and I try to understand how propaganda works and how cults work and how, you know, various trends get started, I've started to, you know, form the opinion that anytime you're surrounded with complexity, there's going to be a million different explanations, right? And so the human body is incredibly complex, and how we metabolize nutrients and how we respond to training is incredibly complex. And so given the amount of complexity that exists, there's probably a study that will suggest almost anything's true, right? You know, is a 16-8 window best for intermittent fasting? Is 18-6? Is 24? It's like, irrespective of what the true answer is, you can probably find a study that says whatever it is you want is the right answer. And so one thing that I shy away from, because I'm not a registered dietitian, is I don't make any declarative claims about like, this is the healthy way to do it. Because like, frankly, I don't know. I've just used my own experience as an experimentation, where I kind of, you know, I'm using rough proxies. Like, are my blood tests good? Yeah, they're great. Do I feel good? Yeah, I feel better every day. How's my body composition? It's improving. How's my strength? It's improving. How's my endurance? It's improving. So it's like, I don't know what health is, but I know that these are certainly symptoms of health. And so whatever it is I'm doing is leading to, you know, an increased demonstration of these symptoms of health. So as far as I'm concerned, you know, this is healthy. Now, I'm sure there's a lot of studies out there that say, you know, the amount of saturated fat that I eat with, or the amount of calories that I eat with, is bad. But, you know, a lot of people misunderstand how science and the scientific process works. So they look at all these studies and they say, this is bad for you. And the reality is, you know, even if a study is perfect, it doesn't prove that something's bad for you. It proves that it's bad for the average person that was in the study, right? So you have to ask yourself, is what you're doing consistent with the average person in studies? If it is, you probably have a lot of other issues on your hands, because that means you're living a life that's like typical of other people, right? But the further you get away from a typical existence, the less reliable a lot of these studies actually are, right? So like, you know, you could do a study of people on 3,500 calorie, 4,000 calorie diets, and you could say the risk of cardiovascular disease is like 80%, risk of obesity, diabetes is through the roof. And it's like, okay, but add one caveat. How many of them are training the way I'm training? Or add a couple caveats. Like, okay, but how many of them are doing this lifestyle change that I'm doing and doing this lifestyle change? And all of a sudden, the results of the study will be completely different, but they don't necessarily tell you that. And so a lot of these like diet gurus will take advantage of the fact that there's so many studies out there that say anything that they want it to say. There's people who are desperate out there looking for fast tracks to lose weight. You know, they want to look like they looked like in high school. And so this is exactly the cohort that's going to bite on any new fat, right? So, you know, no surprise, they're like you, they're going to jump from diet to diet to diet, and they're going to keep jumping because none of them are going to work, because they weren't really designed to work. They were designed to attract you. They'll eventually give up and they'll think, well, you know, I tried all these things. It just doesn't work. I don't have the genetics for it. It's like, well, no, there's an infinite amount of bad things you can try that won't work. Like that's how knowledge works. You can try the things that don't work your entire life and they will still not work from start to finish. You try something that works, it generally gives you feedback like within days or weeks. So like stick with that.
Since coming out with the book, I have to ask, people, when they latch onto something, you mentioned cults, you know, and people, it seems like they want to find a tribe. And let's use keto. I'm keto, and we're keeping the carbs down. And we're going to lead the way on this front. Mm-hmm. Have you found a lot of pushback from those? Because basically, what you're doing is anti-brainwashing. You're saying, get out of this cult, get out of this club, get out of this tribe, and just, you know, be moderate in this. Don't be extreme in one thing or this thing or that thing. Have you had those people pushing back against your methodology?
Not a ton, because I try not to be adversarial. And honestly, I look at a lot of these diets similar to religions, right? Like you can look at antagonistic religions that can't simultaneously be true, yet find value to the people who follow in each of them, right? So the same thing is true with diet. And I've tweeted this several times where like I think that it's very possible that people who've had success on like carnivore style diets are possibly allergic maybe to the glyphosate that is in Monsanto Roundup that gets sprayed on the crops that are eaten in the United States, right? So maybe it's not that vegetables or grains will kill you. It could be vegetables and grains will kill you if you have a certain type of genetic profile and you live in a region where it's legal to use Monsanto's Roundup, right? Well, you know, who are the people who are tweeting about the success they've had with the carnivore diet? It's exactly this cohort. And I think the same could be true with carbs, right? Where, you know, when you consume sugar, the way your brain responds, from what I understand, is very similar to consuming cocaine. But we also know that not everybody responds to cocaine the same way. You know, some people can, you know, go do a bunch of coke. You know, maybe they go to sleep, maybe they don't, but like the next week they're not craving it, right? They can work. Other people, maybe they're doing coke a handful of times, and then, you know, 3 months later, they're fiending for it, and they just need it more and more and more. And so we obviously have accepted that this exists in the case of drugs and alcohol, right? Alcoholics are told not to have alcohol. Like, you're not supposed to, like, have it in moderation. You don't go to, you know, the Betty Ford clinic and, like, oh, it's, like, right after, you know, have one. Like, they're, like, nodding. You can't do that. And so it could very well be the same that people with carbs, you know, respond quite similarly, where, you know, it's really hard for, you know, it's like the Pringles or Doritos or something that you can't eat just one. Whenever it is I watched these commercials on TV 10 or 15 years ago, Lay's maybe, like maybe it's a certain segment of the population, like really can't eat just one. And if you really can't eat just one cookie or just one donut or just one serving of bread and pasta, like maybe it is smarter for you to eat none. And it, and maybe it is okay for you to demonize these things the way alcohol is demonized by certain religions, right? Because like Muslims don't drink alcohol, Mormons don't drink alcohol. Guess what? For religions that don't drink alcohol, they don't have problems with alcoholism, right? So there's this thing that exists with a small percentage of the people who could possibly follow it. There is a mitigating belief system that, you know, essentially gives the herd immunity against this thing that affects a small percentage of it. I don't understand why keto or carnivore type diets aren't given the same leeway as these sorts of religious adjustments or religious you know, exemptions that people get for, you know, somewhat aberrant, you know, lifestyle practices. So as far as I'm concerned, like, do I eat carbs? Yes. Do I try to limit my carbs? Yeah, I actually do. I do eat less carbs than, you know, intense training athletes. So I'm probably right in the middle where I do believe that eating carbs makes the rest of your food taste better. So you eat more of it. So if you don't count calories like I don't, you need to have something that moderates the amount of food that you eat. And as far as that works for me, it's training intensity, which actually moderates my hunger, but then also managing my carb intake. Because if I consume 12 to 14 servings of carbs a day, which most people would in my caloric intake, I'd actually have a much higher caloric intake. So I don't do that. So I see value in both camps. Like, can I train better with carbs? I absolutely can train better with carbs. Do I try to limit my carbs so I limit my overall caloric consumption? Yes, I do that too. And I see carbs as a caloric expansion mechanism. So, you know, I don't try to pick fights against either group because I really think they're talking past each other. Like, I see these fights that like Lane Norton has with like Tro on Twitter. And it's like, you guys are speaking a different language. Like, you're not even engaging in the same argument. So I'm not going to even participate in an argument like that because I think both of them have validity behind what they're saying.
I hope those who are listening or those on YouTube who are watching are truly taking the notes that people are going to listen to you and they're going to say, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to be in the middle of camps and pick and choose what works for you. You've got to commit. You've got to be a part of this because we've gotten so binary online that people are like so in their camp that they're not even considering the moderate position. Like you said, sitting there and watching like, guys, stop. What works for you? Follow that. Implement that. It's trial and error. Test it out. Figure it out. You know, yeah. They're like branding each other like keto. Psh, you know, that's, I have to stay in this club.
Yeah. But I mean, that's how cults work. It's like, if you're surprised, you like obviously haven't spent enough time studying cults. Like what cults do is, you know, they try to drive out you know, aberrant behaviors. So the people who question the sanctity or like the original doctrine of the cult tend to get, you know, excommunicated from the small circle. And then people who are in fear of being excommunicated from the small circle will start, you know, pointing fingers at others in the group, similar to what you see with like cancel culture, so they can show their allegiance to the group ideology. It's just silly. It's like, I'm controversial enough as it is because I say things that I think that I don't need to pick more fights than I will already pick with simply stating what I believe. I don't need to go out of the way and state something I don't believe to pick fights because I will already pick enough fights by stating things I do believe.
That's refreshing, man. It's great to hear some normalcy in the world. And I think people listening will agree with that because it's gotten a little insane.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm going to shift gears a little bit.
Okay.
So collegiate athlete, made it to the pros, played in the minors, worked at Google, wrote a book. You have online businesses and everything going on. Yet, if you were to look at the titles of your things, you're a very lazy person. Mm-hmm. You know, 10 easy wins. And this, I'm going to give the title and we can talk about possibly restructuring if you want to have that conversation.
Yeah.
But the recipe book. So I have a lot of people asking, like, let's do the podcast. Let's do a morning brew.
Yeah.
I'm like, guys, like, I'm really busy. I've got a lot of irons in the fire right now.
Yeah.
But as soon as you hit me up, I was like, fuck yeah. Like, let's do it. Let's go. Because the last one we did helped a lot of people. I'm all about helping people. So this one will as well.
Yeah.
So you came out with the recipe book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the massively simple recipes for working athletes.
Yeah.
And as soon as I saw massively simple, I'm like, man, this guy gets it. Like, people are not looking for, you know, the master chef
right?
You know, 3 hours of a meal. Like people are looking like, look, I'm in a hurry. I have a life. I'm busy. And you wrote particularly for them.
Right.
So let's start with the title of the book. It's for athletes. It's for people. What are we doing here?
So, you know, maybe we can talk about how I got to the point where I am, which probably would make sense for why my recipes were basically simple. I love eating, right? Like people see pictures of me with my shirt off, you know, low body fat, you know, good strength, whatever. And they will assume naturally, like other people who look like me, that my entire goal of my 20s was to look like that. And that's not true. My entire goal of my 20s, I mean, not my entire goal, but a big goal of my 20s was to eat as delicious food as possible and not get fat, right? That was the goal. It was not to be 4% body fat.
I do think that is a large percentage of the population's goal. I want to eat a lot of great food and not look fat.
Right. And so the issue with a lot of the spokes models is they don't walk that walk. Like they're eating salads or going, you know, whatever it is they do to cut calories and get lean, it does not interest most people. What I did is I decided that I'm going to eat as deliciously as possible. I've noticed that people who have, you know, 10% body fat or lower tend to have advantages in work. I'm not going to complain about getting passed up for a promotion because someone else is like tall and good looking. I'm going to be good looking, as tall as I can. I can't really grow at this point. You know, so my dedication to training in my 20s was more, I don't want any excuse for not being successful other than like pure luck. I want to cover every corner that I possibly can. But I also knew that like being 4% body fat wasn't really necessarily that much more beneficial than being like 8% body fat. And I was like 12% body fat at the time. So it wasn't like, you know, 4% body fat was even something that I was like able to wrap my head around. So simultaneously, I'm like living in San Francisco, you know, before it started to go insane, and living in the Italian neighborhood where I had access to really, really good food. And so across the street from this deli called Molinari's Deli, it's like 130 years old. People come from New York. I've seen them buy like $60 worth of salami to just carry in their travel bag back. Right? I was very fortunate to be very close to a deli that had very good, you know, kind of pre-made or almost pre-made materials. And I was also familiar with very basic foods that I like to eat, right? Like I figured out, you know, around college age or maybe a little bit after college age, like cooking meat, it just required me like heating up a pan, putting some oil on a pan, and then like putting a piece of meat on the pan, flipping it like a couple times. Like that's basically it. A lot of people aren't even there yet. They think it's like way more complicated than that. But I knew that was fine. I knew how to boil pasta. I knew how to bake things. I knew that adding cheese to things like typically made it taste good. And so I wasn't starting out trying to be a published author who creates recipe books. My whole motivation was, how do I create delicious food for me to consume only? And after doing that for several years, I was able to create really tasty food that I really, really liked that I could make very quickly because I also had a full-time job and I had no interest in like spending hours in the kitchen. I didn't have an Instagram. It wasn't like I was posting this food for anybody. It was just for my own personal consumption. And so, you know, maybe through 2017, 2018, all of the food that I was eating was sort of oriented towards like, let me get a lot of high protein, good tasting stuff in my system. It wasn't until 2019 that I started to be a little bit more conscientious about the actual ingredients besides like protein and carbs that were in my food. Or I would say more carbs, like more conscientious of like, you know, is there canola oil in this? Is there soybean oil? What exactly am I eating? And, you know, basically it wasn't that hard for me to take a look at my recipes and make some very minor adjustments to them where I could basically eat the same food that I was eating in 2017, 2018, which was delicious, which allowed me to get in, you know, 5 to 6% body fat shape and add slight tweaks to them that could allow me to continue to make gains even as I crossed 30 years old. And so, you know, again, none of this stuff could be created if my starting intention was to sell eBooks. Like it would have taken too long. It's taken me like probably, you know, if I'm cooking 4 hours a week times, you know, years, 200 hours a year times. So I've had over 1,000 hours of cooking feeding into this. And it's only, you know, in the last few hundred hours where people are like, oh, that looks really good. And you're not fat. Can you teach me how to do that? And it's like, oh, bonus. I also don't want to spend a ton of time in the kitchen either. I don't know how to. I've never read any complex recipe. I have no interest in doing that. I just want to create good tasting food that I can eat wherever I go. Part of my day happens to be at an office, so I need to figure out how to cook, like the steak that you saw was cooked in my office, the sweet potato that you saw was warmed up in my office. Like, I need to figure out how I can eat delicious food, not because I'm going to open up a Michelin star restaurant, but because I need to eat like 3 or 4 meals a day and I want them to taste as good as possible because that just makes life that much better.
I'm going to throw a picture up that I want people to understand. So those who are on YouTube will get it. Those in the podcast, switch over. There's a link below. You'll be able to see. So this is the photo that this is like the winning photo.
Yeah.
The jacked dude in the middle surrounded by actual food. Mm-hmm. So people are going to think, oh, you can only have a sliver of steak. I've been watching the stuff you post. Like I said, ever since we linked up on that first one, I've kind of been tracking where it is you're going, what it is you're doing, taking some of your sample. I'll be getting this book as well to start making some of your meals because it's good food, man. It looks good. It's healthy. It's nutritious, but it's also intentional. There's a purpose and a point to this food. It's not just gluttony for the sake of just feasting. There's a reason you're making these foods.
And we can talk about all of these things. I mean, if you want to keep that up, I'm more than happy to kind of go through exactly.
I'll toss it back up there.
On all of those. To be fair, half of those I did cook. And I think the bottom three and the top right one, I did not cook. Those are restaurant food. But all of them follow a similar principle. So protein dominant food. You'll notice every food on here, possibly with the exception of that pasta, is like a lot of protein. That pasta has, I would say, 60 grams of protein in it, which is a lot for a pasta. Most pastas you buy in restaurants probably have a half to a third of the amount of that seafood in there. But starting from the top left, you have a New York strip steak. It's about a 14 to 16 ounce steak with a few sweet potatoes. So that's a gluten-free meal. The carbs, sweet potatoes have actually very few carbs in them for how big they are. You know, so that may be like, there's three small sweet potatoes, but it's actually only the equivalent of like 2 servings of carbs, maybe. And then that pound of steak has like 90 grams of protein, which is about half of what I try to get per day. So that's why I feel comfortable eating that. My LDL cholesterol is 57 at the last time I checked. Last time I checked, my body fat was higher. So when I get it checked next week, it's probably going to be below 57, which is actually a problem. But like consuming all that red meat hasn't done me bad at all. So I'm fine continuing to do it. Moving to the center, that is a thin crust tortilla pizza. So that is also gluten-free. I've been trying to limit some of the gluten I've been consuming, not because I'm celiac, but just because it might reduce some joint inflammation. So I'm just kind of testing it out. The seafood you see on that pizza, there's 45 grams of protein. And it's almost pure protein. Like most seafood outside of salmon, like, you know, shrimp, clams, calamari that you see on there is like 90% protein. And it's sitting on top of a tortilla. So most of the damage that I see that happens in pizza is the crust, your thick crust or somewhat thin crust. That's a tortilla. That tortilla is 1.5 servings of carbs, and it's a rice-based tortilla. So I'm not actually adding flour to it. There's a little bit of canola oil in that, which is not the best, but it's only a very small amount. So I'm like kind of okay with doing that.
Now, as you make these, so how long would you say it took you to make the steak and the sweet potato?
Well, so the way I prepare them is in tandem. So the sweet potatoes I prepare on Sunday. So I prepare because they're easy and it's in my recipe book. You just roast them. You just like put them in some tinfoil and cook them. And like, you know, an hour or two later, they're ready. And so I save them throughout the week. Sometimes I eat them at lunch like I'm doing right now. Sometimes I eat them at dinner. So that just took like a few minutes to warm up the sweet potatoes, and while the sweet potatoes were warming up, you know, that steak took like 12 minutes to cook and then couple minutes to sit and cut. So that took 20 minutes. Yeah. The pizza probably took closer to 30 minutes because I sauteed the seafood before. And then I put it, but it's all simple. Like that pizza can be made with a skillet and a toaster oven. Like you don't even need an oven. Like you could probably even make that in a hotel room if you like really, really applied yourself to it. And so these things are all simple and they're all derivations of the same thing. So like if you learn how to cook that pizza, guess what? That pasta that's on the center right, it's basically the same way. The way that you cook the seafood is exactly the same. You know, the seafood, cooking calamari, cooking octopus, the challenge of it is the liquid that is in the seafood. So once you figure out how to extract the liquid from the plate to where you can actually sear it to a crisp, you know how to, and restaurants don't do this, by the way. So if you go to a restaurant and you get you know, some sort of pasta, seafood pasta, that seafood that you're going to be having is probably steamed. It doesn't have the crispness of a cast iron that I've been able to do just kind of like inventing my own stuff. And so once you figure out how to eliminate the water from the calamari or from the octopus, you can get your seafood really crispy. Once you have your seafood crispy, it tastes awesome, whether it's on a tortilla like you see on the top right, or whether it's mixed with pasta, which I also sear on a pan because I like my pasta crispy. So like the more time you spend cooking, the more you realize like, hey, I didn't even realize that I like crispy pasta because I've never had it in a restaurant. I didn't even realize that the seafood pasta that I have in restaurants is actually kind of soggy compared to what I make at home. Like you don't even realize this until you start spending time cooking simply, realizing like, oh, once I know how to cook this one thing, it can transform to three separate areas and I can make pizza, I can make pasta, and I can make like ABC. And so I can make fried rice too, right? So a lot of my recipes are derivations of basically the same principles because I have no formal culinary training. All I've tried to do is create delicious food as simply as possible. I have no interest in listing a bunch of complicated steps. I don't read recipes like that myself. I think I've read like in my life, I've read like a couple recipes. So, you know, I just want to show people that this is doable. I'm not a chef. I'm not like I have no formal training. I just love to eat. And I figured out how to eat in a way that is in accordance with a busy lifestyle because I've had a 9-to-5 job for the last 10 years. You know, and I haven't gotten fat so far, knock on wood.
So there's a, you know, make everything great again. You're about to make home cooking great again, man.
I want to.
You're bringing it back.
I want to.
So I do have a question for you.
Yeah.
There are people listening and they're going to ask, because everybody asks themselves, you know, is this for me?
Yeah.
So is this for somebody that's on a weightlifting program? Is this something that runners could factor into their lifestyles? Is it for everybody? You know, is there a certain window that you're, a demographic rather, that you're looking for?
Yeah. So I think a lot of my, you know, there's not a lot of scientific research that I've done in the last few years to tell me what to eat. I let my own body dictate if I'm on an appropriate plan, right? So people say, is this food good? Is this food bad? The way I determine if a food's good or bad is how it affects my training, right? And so what that means, and also inclusive of the feedback that I get from other people, is there's going to be something for everybody. Like everybody can take a portion of what I'm saying and find applicability to it. That being said, because most of my focus is how can I personally get the most out of my life, the more someone's life resembles my life, the more transferable what I've learned can be. And so the people that I've communicated with, like there's a not insignificant minority of people who loses more fat on high calorie diets. I think I'm one of those people. There was a major league pitcher who reached out to me on Instagram who, you know, appears that he's in the same boat where he was encouraged by other people to start, you know, monitoring his caloric consumption as he crossed 30, people telling him his metabolism to slow down. And when he actually did that, you know, started the downward spiral. And so he reverted back to what he'd done before, which is eating a lot of good food. And, you know, the symptoms of aging, you know, reversed. He started getting more lean muscle, losing fat, having better workouts. And so I think that the closer you are to being, you know, a strong, conditioned individual, the more useful a lot of this stuff is. But I think anybody, like, who doesn't like eating good tasting food? Like, there's lean, low calorie options that you can do for almost all of the recipes that I put out. It should you so choose. But a lot of the recipes are oriented towards somebody who wants to eat a lot of food, right? So I would not suggest that like the guy trying to go on a weight loss plan load up on the bone marrow that I myself eat 3 times a week and you can cook very simply and there's a recipe for it. I do think that like all the guys at Iron Valley Barbell who are trying their best to eat 5,000 calories a day but are struggling to eat like 3 Chipotle burritos every day, like, yeah, I think those guys would absolutely dominate the bone marrow and it would be very useful for them. And so, you know, originally I named the book, you know, For Working Athletes, you know, before releasing it, you want to make a change for very busy people, because I do think that the main modification that my recipe book offers is the fact that these things can be cooked quickly. Like, you don't need to be a competitive athlete to find value from it. That being said, if you are on a intense lifting and conditioning program, that's what I'm on. And so, you know, that would increase the likelihood that your results might be more similar to mine.
Well said. What's interesting is, so as a father of two, as a married father of two, I've got a whole family that I'm looking out for. And what I find interesting about this, and some people, they overthink everything.
Yeah.
This recipe book has a bunch of recipes for good food that is going to help sustain an active lifestyle.
Yes.
Leave it at that. So when I cook something, I can just condition it, not condition it, but rather make sure it fits four people that are going to eat it.
Yeah.
Spread it out. We're all eating good food. It's all healthy food. You know, whether me, you know, I'm lifting, my wife is more cardio, my kids are kids just running around doing their sports.
Yeah.
It's conducive to everybody. It's not a special 1% club that's trying to become, you know, whatever, you know, an Olympic athlete. You know?
Yeah, like a lot of the recipes work with toaster ovens, like legitimately. I posted
this. You said you could make it in a hotel room. I mean, come on now.
Yeah, I mean, you got to bring some equipment, but like you legitimately don't need a full kitchen for a lot of this stuff. And it's like, the reason I never read recipe books is the same reason probably people who buy my book never read or bought recipe books. It's like, they're complex. It's like, add a pinch of this, wait 15 minutes here, do this, do that. I'm like, what? Like, what if I get it wrong? What's a pinch? What's a half teaspoon? What's this? What's that? It's like, and to be frank, I don't even cook with recipes. Like, I had to write down what I do naturally. So that's the goal for anybody buying this, is like, learn the recipe, but then like use that as a crutch, and like 2 or 3 months out, just figure out how you like it, and then screw what I said. Mine's just guidelines. Like, I think approximately this amount of salt, some pepper, whatever. You might like half a salt. You might like double a salt. Figure out what you like. The more you can figure out your own palate, the more rewarding cooking is going to be, because that's actually going to maximize the difference between your own cooking and restaurant cooking. As you get to understand your own palate, and as you get to understand how to recreate the flavors and tastes for you specifically, you'll start to realize 2-3 years into it that, like, I don't actually want to go to that fancy restaurant on Friday night. I would much prefer home cooked food, because as much as I like the wait staff there, and as much as I think the chefs are good, they don't know my exact taste buds. And so, you know, what I think is ridiculous, I also think it's symptomatic of what people do to demonstrate false expertise, is they add complexity to what they do, right? You want, you know, people, and this hustle has been going on for generations, probably millennia, right? If you want people to think you're an expert and you're really not that much of an expert, add complexity to your explanation of how you do what you do, right? If you're really, really, you know, comfortable with the material that you're presenting, dumb it down, right? And so what that suggests to me is a lot of these people who have been, you know, hawking recipe books over the last several decades are kind of con artists, right? It's like, you're like, the taste you're trying to recreate doesn't require that amount of work. So why are you adding all of these steps of complexity? And it reminds me of all these coaches I would have who just have their players do really, really complex drills so that they could convince other parents that they had some sort of, like, you know, illicit knowledge that no one else had. It's like, no, just do the simple thing that works. Like, that's it, and get good at that.
Something you said that's really interesting, and I think I'd like to go back to it, is that you told people who are going through it to cater it to themselves.
Yeah.
People, it's almost as if they've eliminated themselves from the equation. They're like, no, I have to follow this that way. Yeah. And I've got to be a part. You don't. You really don't. It's okay to have your preferences. It's okay to cater things to yourself. Again, this goes back to the binary, which I think is a symptom of just online social media. People think they have to be extreme this or extreme that. And they totally, like, there's no personality to it. There's no individual approach. It's just, oh, that guy's doing it this way, I got to do it that way. Whereas right. You're saying, look, cater it to yourself. Find your preferences. Now, don't be fat. Don't use a tub of lard. You know, let's be adults here. But there's something to be said for putting your own little spin on something, that people have lost that permission to do so.
Right. And it the reason I think that that's the case is it actually eliminates personal accountability, right? Because if all you're doing is following someone else's lead, if it doesn't work, you just point your finger at the leader and say, well, I just did what he told me to do and it didn't work, so screw that guy, right? But the reality is no one's individual plan is going to work for you as well as it's worked for them, right? Because their plan is for them and you are not them. And so the way that you can learn, and this doesn't matter if it's cooking, it doesn't matter if it's like planning your career, planning your family, you look to people who are successful. You see certain common elements that successful people have, and then you try to replicate the common elements of success. But everything needs to be done to you individually if you really want to get elite results, because all the people with elite results are creating bespoke plans that are tailored especially for them. So if you want elite results, you need to take the accountability of creating a program that is tailored to you, right? If you can't do that, then you're relying on other people. And the more other people you're relying on, like, we haven't invented a mechanism that can deliver biofeedback from a patient to a doctor or an athlete to a coach or a trainer. So you can have the best trainer in the world. You can have the best doctor in the world, but they can't feel what you're feeling. They can't. All they can do is hear the words that you're expressing or watch your movement patterns or like look at you for symptoms, but they can't actually feel the way you feel. You are the only person in the world who can feel the way you feel. Take advantage of that, because that means that you get personal feedback that nobody else can get for you. So nobody else can create a plan that takes into account the personal feedback that you're feeling at the level that you're feeling it. So, you know, if you want the kind of 80-20 plan where you don't have to think too much about it, follow the leader, fine. Because you can't be individualistic with everything that you do. But for the things that you want to be very, very good at some point you almost have to be individualistic, because there'll be no template blanket plan that just works for you at an elite level, like randomly, unless you're extremely lucky.
We're in January 2020. We're 1 month in. For the people who are like, you know, this is going to be the year, like, I'm finally going to do it. If they were to get both your 10 easy wins for easier fat loss and get the recipe book, so now they've got kind of the tag team, mm-hmm. What would your guidance be to them? Because I'm going to have links to them below. They're going to watch this. They're going to get motivated, you know, like, want to continue forward. That motivation, it dies quick. We all know this. Then discipline kicks in. What would your advice to them be to make this stick, actually, and to make it work?
I should actually draw a graph for this. So you need to be active. You need to realize, like, mentally, you need to realize that however long it took you to get into the condition that you got in, it's going to take a percentage of that to get out, right? So if it took you 5 years to get in a certain place, it's probably going to take you at least 1 year to get yourself out of it. If it took you 10 years to get to a certain place, it's probably going to take you at least 2 years to get out of it. And that's okay, right? So you have to prepare yourself for a longer walk. And I'm saying walk instead of battle, because I don't want it to be a battle, but you have to mentally prepare yourself for a longer walk than you realize you'll have to take. I think the thing that you want to avoid is operating based on a feeling of disgust. Because if you look at yourself in the mirror and you're fat and you don't fit in your clothing and it's embarrassing to go to the beach and you see your neighbors are fit, you see other people on TV are fit and you're disgusted with yourself, the most natural thing to do is to just want to go to the gym and try to burn it all off in like a week. And that's exactly how you're going to fail, because you're not going to burn it off in a week. It just, your body just doesn't work like that. And so what you need to do is realize that, you know, you're your own coach, essentially. Maybe you work with a trainer, but you're responsible for your own progression. You can be forgiving of yourself. It is okay to, you know, it's actually okay to cheat occasionally, as long as it's occasionally and not like chronically. It's okay to do it occasionally, but your mindset needs to be fixated on developing habits. So I think the first month of starting something, I am not concerned with the intensity at which you're training. I don't care how much you're deadlifting. I don't care how much you're squatting. I don't care how fast you're running, if you're even running. I just care that you're showing up every day. Because you need to get in a position where you're forming habits. So if you need to be at work at 9 p.m. and the habit that you need to build requires that you have an hour to dedicate to training, and it requires, you know, a half hour of commute for you to get to work, Like, we already know that you're probably getting up around 6 or 6:30 at the latest, probably closer to 6. So you need to just build that habit. That habit is going to be hard enough for the first month. You don't need to layer multiple, you know, spoonfuls of medicine in the same month. Build the habit of getting up early so you can get a training, your training in before work. When you're doing your training, start at a level that you can do repeatedly. Pick when you're day one, you're going to look the same day two as you look day one. You're going to look the same day three as you look day two. You're going to look the same week two as you look week one. Like, you will not see a visual difference in the mirror for weeks. I don't expect to. So what's going to happen is, if the effort that you put up is too large, the visual outcome that you see will not justify that effort. So you want to actually moderate the amount of effort that you put in the beginning, just like you're running a race, right? Moderate effort in the beginning. Develop habits. Wake up, walk if you're out of shape. Just walk for 45 minutes or an hour even, and measure how far you walk. They try to walk further in the same amount of time the next day. Everything that I encourage from a training standpoint is progressive overload. So it really does not matter where you're at now. All that matters is you're putting yourself in a position to get 1% better next week. Because no matter how low you go, take advantage of the fact that compound interest applies not only to finances, but also to personal health. So if you can just get 1% better every week, you know, by the end of the year, because 1% compounds, maybe you're 80% better than you were at the start. Now, maybe that's not where you want to be, but 80% better is better than where you are now. And if you maintain that for 2 years, then all of a sudden you are 224% better. That math is right. You know, so that's how these results compound. Like, I didn't get to be where I am in 1 year, right? It took me many, many years of training to get where I am. And the reason I've been able to do it is actually because I enjoy the aspect of training. I enjoy pushing myself. I enjoy seeing if I can get stronger. I enjoy seeing if I can improve my endurance. And when you start to structure your training so that you enjoy it, you will get intrinsic joy from being able to beat your old self. And ultimately, we're all in a competition with who we were yesterday, who we were last week. All you got to worry about is beat the guy who was on the field last week. Beat the guy who was in your shoes last week. As long as you can beat the guy who was in your shoes last week, you're going to get better. And as long as you get better every week, like, you don't know what your limit is. But what you can't do is get greedy on time, because the changes took a long time for you to get in your position where you are. They're going to take a long time for you to get where you want to be. So you just need to make sure that you're patient and you're getting 1% better every week.
I think that advice, that information will change lives. I think people listening to that, if they can make that small shift in perspective and not go to the gym out of self-hate, but rather self-love,
yeah,
you know, not go there, like you said, disgusted, but rather motivated. Like, all right, you know, I'm doing this because I want to be better, not because I want to be better next week and drop 5 pounds for this reunion, but because I'm changing my life.
Yeah.
You know, if you were to grab the two resources that Alex has made below, it's not the quick hack to feeling better in a week. It's a lifestyle change. It changes your entire perspective on food, on training. Why are you doing it? You're not doing it to be a part of this camp or that camp. You're doing it to live more intentionally. And that's why I, like I said, as soon as you drop this, I wanted to get this out there for the masses, because I believe in what it is you're doing. You know, like Ed said, this is personally, it changed my perspective. So I can't imagine, you know, because I was kind of like on the fence, like, hey, something's up here.
Yeah.
I mean, for those who are like still in the camp and they can open their eyes. Oh my God. You know, they're like, God, I'm following this dogma, but I'm not getting the results. Once they like give themselves permission to break free, dude, I've eaten more in this past month than years. And my lifts are going up. My body's looking better. Like, I'm losing weight while eating. It's insane.
Yeah. You know? Right.
And I was talking to my trainer, like, dude, when he told me like what I was going to be eating, I was like, what the hell? And then like weight's coming off and I'm eating 6 times a day. I'm like, whoa, I love food again. And I'm feeling great. You know, life is good.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah. It's crazy how that works. It's like, what I think is wrong with a lot of the studies that people do on food and caloric consumption is like most of the food Americans eat is crap. And so like if most of what you consume is crap, the best way to unfatten yourself is to eat less of that crap. just less of it. Like if you're consuming like a liter of poison per day, my suggestion would be to consume half of a liter of poison per day. Like, and that's basically what most dietitians do. But what if you realize that like you don't actually need to consume poison? You can actually consume non-poison and you can do a liter a day of it and it like doesn't impact you the same way. So like just avoid the poison. It's like, you look at 100 years ago, people did manual labor. Yeah, they did. And they didn't have like Doritos and like color TVs and all that stuff, and, like phones to keep them seated and went outside and stuff like that. But for the most part, 100 years ago, people weren't fat. I mean, you know, there were some, but like most people were not fat. And it's like, did they have a really poor? Well, some of them were poor, but not everybody was poor 100 years ago. So did they have access to food? Yeah, they had access to plenty. It's hard to overeat real food. It's like real organic fruit isn't as sweet. Real food does not have the flavor that a Dorito does, right? It's going to take more volume in your stomach to eat it to get that equivalent flavor. Like it satiates you. It makes you full. Crap food doesn't make you full. You can eat like a sleeve of Oreos. You could eat like a, Dave Rubin just posted a Thin Mints box and said, please everybody pray for me. These just got delivered to my office. Like there's no cap on how much of that stuff you can consume. Kind of like a drug, like a drug abuser on a binge. But with real food, it's like, it's just a lot harder to eat too much of it. Like, can you eat too much of it? Sure you can. Like, I could absolutely create a meal plan that would make myself fat in a few weeks. But it would require a lot of work, right? The guys who are working out intensely almost always struggle with undereating rather than overeating. I struggle with undereating rather than overeating. Like every time where I'm like, I don't know if I should eat, like, should I eat this? I don't know. It's like, I get sick. Like, that's it. I always, if I'm like, should I have a lot of this today? Do I have more of it? My punishment is within a couple training sessions, my training intensity plateaus, my immune system weakens, and I get like some mild head cold the next week. So I do not want to make the mistake of under eating. It's just not something that is likely with my training style. And you're talking to somebody who's fat when he's younger. So it's not like a genetic thing. Like my dad's, probably 180 pounds, like 20% body, whatever like a normal 60, say 70 now almost, whatever like a 70-year-old dude looks like that's what he looks like. He's not an athlete, never played sports after like middle school. My mom's like 5'2", like not, she's reasonably muscular, but she's not like anything special. So you don't like, I'm not Terrell Owens. I'm not Shannon Sharpe, right? Like I'm just like, I'm a good athlete who trains hard. And I eat real food. And like, it's just like these very simple things seem to really just work out really, really well.
It's crazy when you look at, I was joking earlier about making home cooking great again, but honestly, when you, and this has been my experience as well, when you're intentional with what it is you're cooking, what it is you're making, there's a purpose to it. Yeah. Kind of enjoy that again. It's like you give yourself permission to enjoy your food again, instead of going through the routine of like, all right, here's food down, eat food. You're like, yes. People will just sit and they'll order it. Like, all right, this is delivered. I ate it. Like they didn't really enjoy the food. They just kind of, they're in this loop of just consuming the food. Whereas it's the deli sandwiches or the pizza or the grinders, right, or whatever the hell it is, they're just, they're not even like enjoying the food they're eating. They're just shoveling it down while they're going.
Yeah. And this is, sort of something that I started thinking about maybe a year ago, where most people consume food the way they consume air. They just consume what's in front of them. They don't think too much about it. And that's to get fat, obviously. It's like, if you're not thinking about the things you're putting in your mouth, you're probably putting too many things in your mouth when you're eating too much. What's crazy though, it's like there's so many ways to kill two birds with one stone in a diet and fitness world, right? Your food literally tastes better when you train, right? So if I'm a glutton, if I love eating, which I do, I love eating very much, there's a couple ways I can make my food taste extremely good, right? That have nothing to do with how I'm preparing the food. If the less food I eat, the better the food I eat, the better tasting the same food tastes, because I'm not just like constantly shoving it down my throat, right? The harder I train, the better my food tastes. So if you want to enjoy eating as much as you possibly can, which I do, obviously, train hard and don't be a pig, right? Like, don't eat just because all your colleagues are eating, right? It's hard. It's a little bit more challenging from if you have a family, but even family style meals. Like if your family is eating three meals a day together, it's probably too much. Chances are not everybody at the table actually needs three meals that day. Especially if you're like a sedentary adult, you probably only need to eat once or twice a day. Like really, you just don't need to eat that many times. But if you get in the habit of just eating because other people are around you are eating, well, that's a great way to get about twice as many calories as you actually need, right? So, you know, again, it's like our lifestyle, our consumer worker bee lifestyle, gets many of us in these tracks, and they don't realize like how far they need to pull the car in reverse to like unlearn a lot of the things that they thought were true and like reorient themselves to a training first plan. But if they can do that, there's so much yield to it. It's like life is so much more enjoyable when you feel good every day and your food tastes good every day. And you get, you know, it's like, I can take all these shortcuts that other people can't take because I'm in shape, right? And I realized this when I was 20 years old. It's like, if you're in shape, people just like let you do more things. So like, if you want a key, you know, if you want a key to the palace, like go do some squats, go do some bench press. Like it's, if you want to make your life easier, right? And that's what you talked about earlier, is like all these things are how to play sports, and I'm always looking for shortcuts. It's like, you can't be successful if you try to run the same race as everybody else. You need to pay attention to what shortcuts, and shortcuts get a stigma in our society because a lot of times people think shortcuts are actually not good, they're cheating, whatever, this and that. It's like, no, you need to pay attention to what's actually necessary for you to accomplish your goals. If you really, really understand something, like real experts in certain fields don't have to try as hard as the people who aren't experts because they understand exactly what's important, right? The hardest you'll work at something is when you're just starting out and you don't have a way to filter and categorize the information that's in front of you. Once you've seen enough success and enough patterns, you know what's most likely bogus. You know what's worth paying attention to. You know what's worth experimenting with. You know what works. So it actually takes less effort to be highly successful in many ways than it does to be moderately successful, because you're only highly successful once you understand what you're doing.
I think for those listening, that you have to understand one thing, and we'll start to wrap up with this. If you're listening to this, you're getting motivated, you're like, all right, I'm going to get this recipe book. I'm going to start applying it. That is the single greatest step that many miss. You have to buy it and apply it. If you don't apply this to your life, it will not work. Yes. People will buy the PDF of whatever workout program. They're like, why am I not jacked? You know, if you read 1,000 books on how to throw a fastball, but you never step on the mound and throw a ball, you will never be able to throw that fastball better.
Yep.
So if you buy this recipe book and you're like, oh, it's got a great way to change my perspective on food, I'm going to leave it over here though on my computer, never open it. your life is not going to change. You have to apply it. Yeah, like it did. It's a net negative. You paid for something you didn't even use. You lost money. You didn't even improve your health. Right. So Alex, as people go through, like I said, the links will be below. They get it. They get the book. If they have any questions, are they able to reach out to you? What's the best way for people to find you?
Find me on Twitter. Sustain Gluttony, SustainGluttony. Also on Instagram, same thing, but there's a period between Sustain and Gluttony. DMs are open. Website should be launching soon. That'll be bigplatetraining.com. It's not live at the moment of the recording, but should be in a little bit. Find me, subscribe to my newsletter if you want more content. I answer emails. At this point, I'm busy. People are grasping my attention, but I do have enough time to respond to individual questions. So, reach out now before I get to Hunter size account. And then maybe I can reply every DM. I love helping people when I can, because all this knowledge, I told myself a year or two ago, kind of like Hunter was saying with respect to buying content, like it only works if you apply it. Well, my knowledge is only valuable to others if I communicate it to them. You know, if it's just lodged in my head, it's only making me better. I can only make other people better if I can get this information out of my head into other people's heads. So reach out, because that's the only way I can do my job.
That's awesome, man. I'm looking forward to seeing your word spread.
Yeah.
For those listening and those who are tuning in, links are below to all the resources Alex has created to include his social media. Alex, thank you for coming on again. Look forward to our next chat.
Thanks so much, Hunter.
All right, guys. Take care.